Michael is regular, but the Pepe is in all capitals.
Well, I do have a loud voice, I've been told. My mother was hard of hearing when she was younger, and so I do speak loud, and it just comes out that way. I don't do it deliberately. It's just that the computer changes it into all caps, because it knows it's me.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is spoken word provocateur, dadaist, yes, and poet Michael Pepe. Are all those things true, by the way? Spoken word provocateur, that's right.
Well, I'm not sure I'm anything that could be given a French accent like provocateur. But I had a dada, yeah. But not a very good one, I guess, because I missed the big Dada festival thing last night. It was yesterday. Did you go to it? Are you a Dadaist?
I was stuck inside a giant whale. All right, so we have Michael Pepe here in the show. We're going to hear more than we want to know about Michael in a moment.
Much more.
But first, a message from our corporate overlords.
Oh, of course.
Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is Michael Pepe.
So ACS.
Actors so, Comedy Studio. Yeah.
So ACS. Okay. Like as in you asked me what was the name of that actor's studio.
Right.
And you just say ACS. Okay. So that's how you pronounce that, I think.
I've never heard that pronounced that way.
Well, that's the way it's pronounced. Or SCA. Backwards. Would
okay.
be, yeah.
I told you that I would like to hear something about behavior music.
Yes.
Which is a musical notation system that you, a language that you developed.
Yes.
In the 1970s and 80s, or in the 80s? When did you?
Late 70. I invented it in about 79.
Okay.
The same year as the Church of the Subgenius.
Okay.
And the First Church of the Last Laugh.
So you had some stiff competition.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was very, and I was very much the punk era. I was like a punk performer. Okay. You remember this back in the day. The idea behind it was that I wanted to be able to musically compose all events, regardless of whether they created a sound. So that means gestures, movements. I did have a little bit of dance training, but it was mainly movements sitting at a desk, because I also used a lot of percussion, because that was my first instrument was the drums. You know, and this will shake your microphone.
Yeah, that's not going to be good for the microphones.
No,
don't do that again.
No, I always do that if I'm on the radio or something, because there's a huge noise and everyone gets upset and it causes a commotion.
Yeah.
So I use percussion, but it kind of started when, because I'm my real main instrument was piano.
Yes.
And I realized that besides composing the notes, you could compose the movements of the hands in the air above the turntable. You know, you could make gestures in between chords and melodies. And I wanted to just compose all of the behavior of the performer, regardless of whether or not he's making a sound with it or moving around or what instrument it was. And so I had to devise symbols that would represent things that weren't sounds. So I had, I studied music, so I had all the music notation, and there's a special sort of notation for vocal music, for experimental vocals and things that was sort of established. So I tried to learn that. And then I studied the thing called labanotation, which is notation for dance.
Laban.
Yeah.
Laban.
Yeah. That sounds classier, Laban. So, yeah. I studied that a bit, and then I just invented my own symbols for the movements and gestures, and also the facial expressions, which I call face music, which was, you know, also written, also sort of drawn on the score, little diagrams and things like that. And I didn't bring this, any of the scores, because this...
It's
this,
radio.
Yeah.
I mean, it's audio.
You got to kind of remember that. Yeah.
And now I think I watched a video of you doing some of this stuff back in the day.
Yeah.
Must have been the
way
80s
back.
Something.
Yes, 80s, and, 90s, yeah.
The score that you had that day was really thick. I mean, it was long. There was a lot of pages of this stuff.
Yes. Yeah, there's about 220 of one piece.
Wow.
Called Act Music Spectacle 5.
Okay.
Of which I only actually never performed the entire, like 2.25 hour piece. And I performed about 2/3 of it. About
Popular demand.
By popular demand.
You never performed the whole thing. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah. After I did this particular big long piece, Act Music Spectacle 5, I took excerpts out of it and performed them in a recording studio. So I basically edited the short 45 version.
Right. Remember,
people
release,
don't remember 45s.
Right, released a couple of singles and a B-side.
Exactly, yeah. So I edited this parts of it together and went into a recording studio and recorded it and made the 13-minute piece called Information Whiteout. Then I would perform Information Whiteout live in sync with the tape, so people could see that it was composed and I wasn't improvising.
Right.
And also, sometimes I put loops in it.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, do like a minute and a half and then just loop that 2 or 3 times.
Right.
Well, anyway, you'll probably edit this part out, because it just doesn't matter to any audience. Not that there's going to be any audience anyway, really. But
now you just insulted three people. Three people really feel bad right now that you said they don't exist.
I know. Well, I'm used to, you know, performing for incredibly small audiences, so I have no sense of hope left. It's hopeless to try to get a wide audience for. Especially if you call it performance art. If you call it comedy, yeah, then people will listen. So that's why I'm hoping this show will make me a star. I mean, I also, while I was doing that, was doing all these other things that I had been doing that led up to Baby Music, which is music. So I've got three piano vocal songs.
Most girls do they not? And I must say rather well. I do too, so I can tell. As a boy, I'd wonder why I'd watch him all day. Now, as a man, still don't understand why girls are so pretty. Their necks and knees and noses, girls are so pretty. Their cheeks as soft as roses, girls are so pretty. Pretty much a honey. Girls and boys are a kit, and invariably fit rather nicely into it. Girls are one way, boys another. Get the picture. Roses are sweet, but they can't compete. Oh, girls are so pretty. They make you weak and lazy. Girls are so pretty. Zoo animals go crazy. Girls are so pretty. Pretty much up my alley. They make you feel so funny. They take all of your money and then they let you go, but never let you know. She's got you in her pocket, your fingers in the socket. You're underneath a spell in Hell Hotel. One look turns you to stone. Beauty cuts to the bone. Girls' necks need I say more, and you boys know what I mean. 'Tis the seat of the serene. Toss their hair and cross their legs and fix their dresses. Out on a date, I can't concentrate. My girl is too pretty. My fingers start to shiver. Girl is too pretty. The car begins to quiver. Girl is too pretty. Pretty perfect for me. They make you feel so nervous. They put you at their service, and then they make you pay like you're just in the way. Her glance is like a rifle, one shot in your whole life. Stop at your yesterday, your clay. Obey, you're rooted to the sky. You can't rise, you're too high. Eyes and lips, that is all that you ever need to know. For where else is there to go? Curling hair and pursing lips and flashing lashes. Boys can be vain, but they end up plain. Ah, girls are so pretty. Their silky satin shoulders, girls are so pretty. Their lips as kisses holders, girls are so pretty. Pretty much a honey. There is a ghost inside my wall. In dusky dreams I hear his call. He wears my hands as gloves. He drives his teams of doves. And everyone I love, he loves. There is a ghost inside my cock. I tick until he tells me talk. And when I'm feeling low, I lean way out my window. until that clock says time to go. When I'm desperately lonely, it calls me to the roof to play, and it beckons me to fly with him away to a new day. There is a ghost inside my house. He is my cat and I his mouse. I hide behind the mop, but he takes one big hop, and on the spot he stops. I stop. What a show! High above myself, looking down on an insect there. Why so sad? Peace is just a pace away. Climb up on the highest place you know. Embrace the blue sky. Death is waiting to love you forevermore. While you waste your time, while you thrash in sadness, you could be timelessly free. There is a ghost upon my bed. When I feel pain, he just feels fed. He showers in my screams. He drinks my tears from streams in which I drown in dreams. He dreams. When in the subway station, has a game called Do You Dare? Do we meet that thundering engine in the air and take it where? There is a ghost just to my right. He sees the world from quite a height. He laughs at mighty sins. His voice is cold as pins. And on the day I lose, he wins. There is a ghost inside my ghost.
I'm not the kind of guy that goes into the woods and does a drum circle, frankly.
With a bunch of other naked guys.
Naked guys that have, you know, man boobs or whatever. You know, I don't really do that. That's not my thing. And also, well, as a drummer, to me, drumming is like you're a star. You're sitting there on a drummer's, what they call a throne, playing many drums. You know, you're not in a line, a conga line, with 10 other guys playing at the same time. I mean,
playing one thing,
and you know, no, you're like Ginger Baker or yeah. Billy Cobham. You're just going nuts and everyone loves you, and the
drummers always think that people love them. That's the problem with drummers. You're going nuts and you think that everyone's like, whoa,
and
he's
no
awesome.
One cares. Yeah,
and they're like, see again?
They don't even see you, for one thing. Yeah. And I know. They don't even know.
Yeah.
The only way they know is you have your shirt off.
New York City streets, bodies in a flock, heaps of thinking meat, on a chug-a-rock, all day long in heat, looking for a little pussy, looking for a little diggy, looking for a little lucky, gotta make it bigger, but I gotta be the winner, making money, rows of black windows, bodies in a box, lies that no one knows, and another lock, into hell we go, everybody giving, taking, making big sleep, awaken everybody, living in a kennel, do walk, talk, and run, rock, and chucking everybody living in a kennel. Do one fucking work, fuck, fucking work, fuck, fuck, fucking in a kennel. Get out. Anybody with a nickel? Do. Anybody with a clittle? Do. Everybody is a body. Here. cunt, dick, tits, ass, humans on the hunt. Gimme money, gimme, let me take a little money, let me take a little money, money, gimme. Anybody, do you wanna lay? I wanna buy a marijuana, Jay. Got a game, do you wanna play? Eat, fuck, die, kill. It knows. Who? Oh, oh. What? What? What the fuck is this? Everybody working, everybody clicking, everybody joking, looking, perking in the pretty gray city. People looking for a little fame. People living in a little game. People nothing but a little name. Jan, Mike, Sue. No. Wait, wait. Time for work. Ooh, time for work. Ooh, time for work. Time for go to work. Now, as soon as possible. Busy, busy. Time for busy, busy. Time for, wait a minute. Hey, 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 hey. Shh, it's okay, it's okay. Siren scrape the night. What a bloody mess, what a bloody mess. What a fucking sight. Put it in the press, put it in the press. Editor's delight. Everybody giving, taking, everybody baking, chicken, baking in the bacon in the city. Everybody screaming, everybody screaming, everybody dreaming, creaming in the city. Everybody in a hustle, everybody in a rustle of a bustle in the pretty shitty city. Men checking all the women out. Women checking all the fellas out. People checking all the people. Girls, boys, men, you, me. It loves. What? What? My great. Ah. It says yes.
John Lennon was my hero. In fact, I did a my first ever naked behavior music performance on the night of his death when he was shot in 1981. I had already been scheduled to do a performance of Act Music Spectacle 4, actually. And I thought, wow, I've got to do something radical. And so I did the whole piece with no clothes on.
Did anyone notice?
And no. No, no one. They felt slightly uncomfortable without knowing why.
So you've been writing. You've been writing stuff all.
Yeah. So I've been writing, and I wrote a long piece, which I really do want to publish somewhere. Maybe in I'm not sure where, because it's so weird. Because it kind of did start as a monologue, but it got too long, and you just can't. You can't talk to people for 2 hours anymore. They're not going to stand for it. You know, they need a break.
When did anyone listen to you for 2 hours?
You know, back
was
in the...
Was there a moment?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. 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 There were moments in the late 70s and early 80s. Because back then, that was the idea, was you did it until you annoyed absolutely everybody. And, you know, they finally, everyone had left. And you thought, okay, I've done my job. In fact, actually, on that score, no pun intended, I have a little story about that, interested, about annoying the audience.
Yeah. Because you like to do that.
You know.
You're good at it. You use it as a tool.
Yeah.
It's a tool.
I've always kind of liked it. And I didn't mean that intentionally, because when I was in college, I used to be in plays and things, and they weren't, you know, annoying. But once I got out and moved to New York, I found out how miserable and awful life was, and how much pain you go through and how much you hate the world. I realized that's what I need to do, is just get back at people because I'm pissed. I have no one else to blame. So if I can just invite as large a number of people as possible and just scream at them.
Yeah.
Feel better, and lo and behold, well, what happened was...
Did that work? Did it make you feel
yes,
better?
Yes, yes. Well, I kind of giving away the ending here.
Oh, sorry.
I started out in New York, I was performing at poetry readings.
Yeah.
So I would do the sound poetry, they called it, or performance poetry, poetry with sounds and with movements and characters. And I got invited to perform at this thing called Club 57 that was run by Ann Magnuson. You know her. Well, she used to produce these punk performance events with people like Silvana Nova and James Chance of the James Chance and the Contortions, which is my favorite band. Because why? Because while performing, he would jump into the audience and attack people and get punched out. And I thought, my God, that's the ideal performance artist. This is a great man. And I saw him twice, and both times he had a bloody nose. And I thought, this guy is a performance god.
He's
right?
Committed.
He is committed.
So this is what, the mid-70s, early 70s?
This is the late 70s. Late 70s. 78, 79.
Okay.
Because I started performing about 78, I guess. And so I got invited to be in this show. And because the whole... It was called New Wave Vaudeville. So that's the... hook, you know, that's the little thing. It's like, we're taking this music phenomenon and we're going to bring it into the theater. We're going to do it performance with it. So I go to this place. It's a big hall and it's full. It's hundreds of punks, real hardcore punks. I mean, we're talking the safety pin through the ear and the torn clothes. Yeah.
Mohawks.
Yeah. The mohawk down the back. And up the ass, and broken glass for breakfast, and so on. And I made a joke about the murder of Nancy Spungen and the death of Sid Vicious. Well, that did not go over well, I can assure you. They really did not like that. It was this unknown guy. Ripping on them, and I went on and on. So they started booing and throwing things. I stayed on. I kept performing the joke.
Couldn't take a hint.
And they couldn't. Yeah,
you couldn't take a hint.
They couldn't take a hint. And so the sound guy shut the mic off. So I'm up there, and then people kind of quieted down to see if I had gone away or not. When they quieted down, they realized I was still telling the joke. They start booing again, even more. Then I keep telling it. The lighting guy shuts off my lights. Now I'm on a dark stage.
With no microphone.
With no mic, still telling the joke. And then they turn the light back on. I'm still there. And so the burly stage manager comes on and physically drags me off the stage. I got backstage, broke away from the guy, went back out on the stage, and gave the whole audience the finger. Walked off the stage. At that night, I realized I had found my life's work. And sure, if I had had lukewarm reactions and, you know, polite applause you get at poetry readings indefinitely, I would have gone into some other field.
My girlfriend, right, she's so fucking stupid, right, she thinks she's so smart, right, she's like, she's like totally fucking stupid, right. She comes into my house the other day, I'm sitting in the kitchen with my mother talking, right, sitting in the kitchen with my mother talking, right, Jenny comes in. Oh, hi, Jenny, how's it going? I'll go see Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and I don't know, maybe we check it out, see the one that we just want to say, yeah, the kind of little things written on me, yeah, I like the kind, we're just talking, right. But my mother's really cool, right? She just, like, gets up, and she goes over to wash and wipe and spray and dust and polish and Windex and the insides of the handles of the margarine compartment, the pickle compartment, the mayonnaise compartment, the refrigerator, because you get really grungy if you leave more than a few hours, right? Right then, my father comes in. Now, my father's, like, getting ready to go to work, right? So he's got, like, about 19 wristwatches on each arm, and his body's papered with invoices. He's got a cash register strapped to each side of his head and a computer terminal coming out of his anus, and his appointments are written on the back of his eyelids because he's getting ready to go to work, right? Pretty soon my father's going, the dictaphone, where is it? Because it's time for him to dictate his inventory of ways to categorize systems of inventories of category systems. Meanwhile, my mother knows something weird's going on because she's looking through the cabinets and she can't find the Bullwinkle spoon. Right then, Ginny starts to get really mean, right? She takes apart the TV, and she hooks it up to my mother's brain so whatever my mother thinks appears on the screen. So, like, on the screen is this huge army stretching the horizon of nothing but Purdue oven stuffer roasters, and they're being led on a charge by Quincy in an 83 Cadillac, and all the roasters are holding spray cans full of Right Guard, except Quincy's got a bazooka full of cheese whiz, and they're all, like, blasting away at the bad guy army of lesbians and Puerto Ricans and household odors and bathtub rings and dogs that go to the bathroom on the lawn and shit. Right then, my brother comes in.
I can tell that some people in the listening audience are already a little queasy, so we should go all the way.
I know. I may as well, because they're going to start getting mad too.
Yeah.
And fortunately, they will not be able to call me.
No, they're going to email booze and email thrown objects to me.
To you,
in my direction.
And you will hopefully, like, email them to me.
Emoji bottle throwing.
Right.
You know, emoji tomato coming
right.
my way.
Yeah. I know.
And I'll forward them to you.
Yeah, forward them. And
I'll create like an email chain for abusive emoji stuff coming in our direction. Yeah.
And what I'll just act it out by actually hitting myself with tomatoes.
Yeah.
Just in order to
record that.
Record it.
How old were you when you first ran away from home?
You know, I ran away late. I was in high school before I was in ninth grade, so 14. Yeah. And how did you know I ran away from
home? Late bloomer.
Yeah. Actually, I shouldn't say that. Now that I think of it, I did run away when I was very small. I ran away from my grandmother's house once, but I also ran away from my home. And I ran and ran and ran a long way, actually, down the road.
As a little kid.
As a little kid, yeah. And got exhausted and started walking and then got my breath back and started running again. And it went on for hours. And then finally I got scared, got lost. And I went out to the first house that I saw. And I said,
You said, hi, I'm a traveling salesman and my car is broken down. Do you mind if I sleep in the barn this
I can sleep in the barn. And she said, yes, but don't touch my daughter. No. I went up to the house, knocked on the door. The nice lady comes to the door. I said, I'm lost. I'm probably crying.
And you're what, six, seven, five?
Yeah, five, six, something like that. And she said, oh, that's okay. I know where you live. It was the lady next door.
As soon as you turn your back, everything in the universe snaps itself inside out with a hideous sucking motion. The only reason you cannot call the world impossible is because it is only through the world that you know the concept of impossibility. You have been led to believe that everyone feels he or she may be the only living consciousness. But you are, in fact, the only one for whom this is true. The fundamental structure of reality is totally transparent. transformed every instant, but it provides you with a phony memory that it has always been the way it is. Since you are always at the exact center of an infinity, there is no such thing as movement, location, space, or time. You are a row of electrochemical events taking place in your cerebrum. Nothing has meaning in itself, but everything can support any meaning. If you could glimpse for even a moment the real meaning of existence, your brain would be neuroanatomically destroyed. You cannot conceive a thing for which you do not have a word. Everyone's perception is radically unique, but leads them to believe it is more or less similar for everyone else. You have always been listening to this tape. You cannot remember a time before you were born because there was no such time, nor any other. It has always been this moment. Death could occur inexplicably any second. The oddness of the world exceeds the imagination by an infinity. It has produced this talking about it, this talker, this labeling of it, this labeler, the concept of labeling, the concept of oddness, the word oddness, the concept of a word, the word concept, and the concept of a concept. Consciousness is not a continuous state, but a momentary surfacing for variable periods at random points.
You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
Yes. Well, I go to bed every morning at about 7 to 8 o'clock.
A.M. is when you go to sleep.
7 to 8 in the morning, yeah. It's happened over many years, and it just happened very gradually, and that's now my biological clock now. I sleep all day, and I usually get up about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, and that's the way I am. I'm just a night owl. There's too much going on during the day, you know, it's disturbing, and there's weird people, it's unsafe, it's troubling.
You feel good at night?
I feel safe at night.
Mm-hmm. All people have a kind of superpower.
Yeah.
And by that I mean some quality or energy that just wants to come through you. Do you know what that is for you?
Well, you know, it's funny because I don't think of it as that being that positive. I am, of course, a tremendous comic book fan, have been since I was a kid. Yeah. And one of my favorites is, of course, X-Men. And I do feel like a mutant. And so that's why I started by saying it's not really positive. I view it as 90% negative, which is why I cured myself of it, for good or for worse. The power is obsessive compulsive disorder. It's crippled me my whole life. I mean, and much more when I was younger. I remember when I was the first sign of it, I was very small, like 6 or 8 years old. My mother can remember asking me, "Why is your left shoe always untied and not your right one?" And I would tell her, because the gun that I was using to play soldier was broken. Because I used to play soldier all the time, and I had like a sawed-off shotgun, had no handle. And I wanted to be even. So everything had to be even. If there was one thing wrong, another thing had to be wrong to balance it out. Yeah. And so from then on, it became a compulsion to list everything. And that was my main problem, because there's many, many kinds of OCDers. There's hoarders. I'm also a hoarder. But there's washers is the most common category. I don't have
hand
that.
Washer.
Hand washers. Yeah, I do not have that. And there's another thing. Well,
so there's hoarders, there's listers, there's washers.
Washers.
Is there any other main
group? Yes, there's there's ritual people who have rituals before going in and out of doors.
They have to touch something five times.
Touch, yeah, touch, right, exactly. Okay. Yeah, you know the thing.
I affected. Done. Continue. Who are we? Nine was born. She, if and we don't. Seven.
See, what I would do is I would keep a diary, and so I didn't have an imaginary friend. What I would do is I would list the number of times I felt pain. Like, you know how, even when you're a kid, suddenly, well, or an adult, suddenly your arm starts hurting like hell.
For no apparent reason.
For no reason at all. Like, you're laying there in bed, and you get this sharp pang. And then a couple seconds later, another sharp pang. And then maybe you get 8 or 10 or 15 of these. Then it goes away. A few hours later, you know, your toe has this sharp pain. Or, you know, you got a headache or something. And I don't know. I felt compelled to list
these things. So
yeah.
You have like date, time,
yeah,
place.
Yeah.
Or something.
Well, yeah. And I, you know, they would say something like, you know, my arm hurts 33 times. Head hurts 20 times. My dad yells at me 15 times. My father used to yell. I didn't get along with my father very well, and so, you know, he would yell at me. I just somehow felt I had to keep track.
I wanted a record of that.
Yes.
Keep a record.
A record. And then at the end of the year, add them all up. And so the final page, you know, you would have, you know, head hurt 393 times this year. Why does anyone keep a diary when you don't let anyone else read it? And in my case, at least, I myself don't read it. It's about just putting it down, and it's about the obsessive compulsiveness of getting in control of it.
Yeah.
And so you write it down, and you can kind of put it away and have a clean slate, kind of.
Yeah.
My question for you is this. You are going to receive a pie in the face with,
oh my God,
with generosity and love. You're going to give the thrower permission,
oh,
to do this to you.
Really? Wow.
Because you're a nice guy.
Yeah.
And the question is, who would you like to have throwing this pie?
Boy, that's a tough one. Who's the most beautiful woman that ever lived? Now, the first name, it's just a name that pops into my head. I haven't really thought about it, but Flo-Jo. I don't know if you remember Florence Griffith Joyner, the runner.
The runner.
I love athletic women, you know. I just, you know, there's something about, well, yeah, because, well, you know, I'm practical and perhaps selfish, I suppose, but
and a little bit romantic.
A little bit romantic, because I'm thinking my willingness to be humiliated will show this lady, you know, how much of a kind of a fun, easygoing, kind of cool guy I am.
All right, here's the very last thing. I'd like on this show to anagram.
Oh, okay.
And so I usually anagram my guest's name and maybe some other words that are associated closely.
Yeah.
And I didn't come up with much for you. I got to tell you, it was a little challenging, which is not a fault.
Yeah.
It's just scientific. That's the anagrammer.
Yeah,
but
I never tried it.
Michael Pepe, I got a couple things. You could read them on the air.
Oh.
Yeah.
A cheap pimple. That's sensational. That's really good. Epic Hemp. Fantastic. Plea, well, Epic Hemp.
The second one is plea, colon, Epic Hemp. Are you a pot smoker?
Wow, yes.
So I think if you were to
beg
for something, you would be begging for Epic Hemp.
That's right. Oh, yeah. In fact,
you put a plea out for Epic
Hemp. I'm no longer going to ask my friends, hey, fire up a bowl. I'm going to just say, plea, Epic Hemp.
And you'll be saying your own name.
Yeah, right.
In some fashion.
Well, yeah, and I'll first have to introduce that. I'll have to say, plea, Epic Hemp is an anagram of my name.
Yes. What's the what's the anagrams for behavior music?
Well, that's it. Ibis Cave Humor. High Rumba Voices is another one. Besides anagrams, another wonderful thing is palindromes. One I did make up is evolution. I to new one, no I. Evolution, no I love to no one. Something like that. That's not it exactly. You got to write it down.
I would like to say
I know evolution. I to new one. No. I don't know. You just got to write it down, I think. You folks out there in radio land, write down evolution and then spell it backwards.
I would like to thank my very special guest, the indescribable Michael Pepe, for coming in this week. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. Dylan Vigil is our producer and engineer. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel.
Wow.
You know Dean, right?
No.
You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio, right here in Hollywood, USA, although this is San Francisco. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thank you for listening. We will be back next week, but without Michael Pepe.